like an animal, talks like an animal, must be an animal. Come hear the animal, talking animal, talking animal.
Good morning. This is Talking Animals on WMNF. I'm Duncan Strauss, and my guest today is Logan Vindette, Executive Director of Kindred Spirits Sanctuary. Founded in 2003 and located in Citra, Florida, Kindred Spirits provides a safe refuge to disabled, abused, abandoned, and neglected farm animals. Stretching across 36 acres, the sanctuary houses some 140 animals, including horses, turkeys, cows, chickens, pigs, and sheep, offering them kind, attentive care in wide open spaces for the rest of their lives. Vindette began volunteering there in 2006, and 4 years later, she was named executive director. In a parallel to the way the sanctuary is dedicated to transforming the lives of its animal residents, Vindette has transformed her own life, embarking on a vegan journey, owing to the bond she created with the animals of Kindred Spirits, which itself underwent a transformation to a totally vegan facility. Also, Vindette will be the featured speaker at the Florida Voices for Animals Have a Heart Dinner and Silent Auction this Saturday, February 29th, from 3 to 7:30 p.m. at the Solid Rock Community School in Tarpon Springs. We'll hear about the Kindred Spirit Sanctuary, what initially drew Vindette to it, why she's never left, obviously about the sanctuary itself, and more when I speak with Logan Vindette in a few moments here on Talking Animals on WMNF. Later in the program, I'll speak with Todd Goldfarb, who, along with his wife, are the owners of Hair of the Dog, a new dog park in the Seminole Heights area of Tampa, just a ball's throw from our studios right here at WMNF. Distinguished, as the name may suggest, by offering a bar plopped down in the middle of the park, so you can nurse a cold one while your dog plays with other dogs. Right now, though, let's get to my conversation with Logan about Kindred Spirit Sanctuary, with a reminder that I invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663, emailing dj@wmnf.org, or texting 813-433-0885. This is Logan Vindette on Talking Animals on WMNF. Good morning, Logan.
Hey, how are you doing?
Good. Thanks for joining us on Talking Animals.
Yeah, for sure.
So we, of course, want to discuss Kindred Spirits and your already long stint at the sanctuary. But with anyone running a sanctuary, which is typically a thankless job involving grueling hours, caring for animals with various conditions, contending with sometimes eye-popping veterinary bills, juggling too few finances, and so on, there's a certain kind of person who lands in that position who often has an intriguing origin story. So I'd like to hear yours, starting with, what role did animals play in your life as a kid growing up?
So my parents originally moved to Florida as cattle farmers. They're from Mississippi, were going to school, and decided to get into the cow business. And so they moved to Florida, had cows for several years. They actually got out of that before I was born, but we always grew up kind of being in that area a little bit. We went to the rodeo a lot. We went to the auction, and my mom is an animal lover. We always had pets, but I remember seeing these cows at all these events and thinking, like, these animals are just so beautiful, and I knew I always wanted to work with animals. My family for a long time wanted me to become a veterinarian. I knew that wasn't for me because I wanted animals to like me.
Okay. So if you're giving them a shot or something, they're not going to be quite as fond of you, I guess. Is that the idea?
Yeah.
Okay.
So I knew I always wanted animals to like me. I didn't know what I was going to do. I started working in a local zoological park when I was really young and worked with exotic animals. And through that, actually, I decided I just want to work with as many animals as I possibly can. So I started volunteering at Kindred. I didn't really know that much about farmed animals at that point, and did not expect to fall in love with them.
So wow.
It was interesting to watch my own transformation.
Yeah, no, and we certainly want to talk more about that. But why Kindred Spirits? I mean, I get that early on you were an animal person and drawn to them, and there was the zoological thing, and maybe there weren't that many other facilities nearby. But since you said that you weren't really a farm animal person, at least initially, what drew you there?
So my husband was a graphic designer, and he actually got hired to do the sanctuary's website.
Mm.
So it was just kind of stars crossing at the right time. So he was hired to do the website, and
yeah.
he wanted to go out and see the place and see what he would be designing. It always helps him get an idea of like what the look needs to be.
Sure.
And so he started volunteering, and he brought me with him. And so I just kind of fell in love with the animals there from that.
Wow. So when you first got there, sort of towed by your husband, it sounded like, in a way, what was your initial reaction? I mean, were you just thrilled? Were you sort of not quite sure what to make of it? I mean, what do you remember just that very first day, or maybe the very first couple of days, what your feelings were?
Yeah, I remember thinking, wow, this is a lot of work. It, as a volunteer at that point, we were relatively small. The sanctuary was relatively small, and there were very few people coming and going at that time. So as a volunteer, you kind of did everything. And I remember physically not being conditioned to do the job, and feeding 100-plus animals is a hard, back-breaking, laboring job. And I just remember thinking, like, I couldn't imagine doing this every day. Like, I'm tired when I leave here. It's so much. But on the animal side, I remember thinking, this is kind of cool. I had worked with exotics, and you don't get to touch them and love on them. And so being around farm animals, you know, they come up to you. They're seeking affection from us a lot of times. And so you're kind of able to provide that, which is a totally different feeling. And it was a really neat feeling that I enjoyed. I liked that the animal wanted us to touch them. We got to pet them, hug a cow, rub a pig's belly, all those things. Like, they're very magical things, and they still are, even, you know, 14 years out. It's those kind of connections are what really make all the hard work worth it. Definitely hard work.
Right. So, and then immediately before that first day or two of volunteering, I mean, you talked about the zoological park. Was that what you were doing just immediately prior, or were you working somewhere else maybe that didn't have anything even do with animals before you first started going to Kindred Spirits?
So I was working at the zoological park when I first started volunteering.
Okay.
Before that, I worked in a couple of vet offices, but it was, you know, I thought for a long time, like, I would be a zookeeper. I was really drawn to that. I enjoyed the work.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's so different. Sanctuaries are so different, and what sanctuaries accomplish, and even what drives a sanctuary is so different. And so I was really drawn to that. I like the driving message of doing everything an animal needs. That is at my heart, who I am. I've always been, I'm that way with people too. You know, I think we have to always be kind. We have to always be working hard and acknowledging other people's needs. And if we promise to take care of someone, whether it's an animal or a human, what can we do to our best ability for them? And so sanctuaries do that, and that really appealed to me at the core of who I am.
So even those first days, did you immediately, with that in mind, feel like a sharp contrast from where you had been working to the initial days volunteering at Kindred Spirits, and just in terms of sort of prevailing philosophy, guiding principles, etc.?
Yes, I remember very vividly looking at what we could provide at the park that I worked, which, you know, was in not the best financial shape at that time, versus the sanctuary. And I remember the sanctuary, just like at Kindred Spirits, we would do whatever. We figured it out. If an animal needed something, we were like, they need this, so we have to figure it out. That's all there is to it. If they need a $4,000 vet visit, like, we have to figure out, how do we get that money? How do we make this possible? And I remember so vividly thinking, like, I love being around a group of people who believe that you can make things happen. Like,
yeah.
We don't let animals suffer. We go, how do we make this happen? And it's also really cool to see a community stand behind you who also believes in what you're doing and is like, yeah, we want to support you to make that happen. So it's totally different.
And so as part of that, when you first got there, it sounds like you kind of felt not only really kind of moved and totally at ease, but almost like you were home in a way.
Yeah. So I was born and raised in Ocala, which is where Kindred Spirits was originally situated.
Okay.
And my whole life, like most people born in Ocala, I was like, I am getting out of this town.
Okay.
There's not much. It doesn't really appeal to me as a person. And then I found Kindred, and after being with Kindred Spirits, like, just for a short time, I was like, I can never leave. This is where I belong. Like, I definitely, in a lot of ways, lucked into the most perfect situation for me.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. And in fact, as we've, I guess, kind of touched on a little bit already, you didn't leave. I mean, you're still there from first volunteering. And so I guess it was, what, about 4 years of volunteering before you were hired on?
Yeah. So I spent the first 4 years as a full-time volunteer. So shortly after I began volunteering there, I left my job at the Zoological Park and volunteered full-time for Kindred. I really believed in what we were doing. And luckily, at that time, my husband and I, we could afford that. He could work and I stay dedicated.
Yeah.
And then Kindred got to a point where the original founders, you know, they weren't sure what they were going to do. And if you do this kind of work, you really realize, like, there are thousands of farm animals at any given moment who need somewhere to go.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to see Kindred's animals end up being in that position. So I stepped forward and said, this is what I'd love to do. I'd love to take this from an organization that your family runs and carries the burden of, and if you will give me a couple years, I will turn this into something that you are not primarily responsible for. I really believe in it. And so, yeah, I didn't leave. I stepped into a bigger role, and, you know, there are parts of being an executive director that I do not enjoy. I'm not a paperwork person, and I'm not an office person.
Yeah.
That is the labor of love for me, and I had a learning curve, and thankfully our founders were great. You know, they really helped me, like, achieve all of those things, because there's so much business that goes into having a sanctuary that I knew nothing about.
Yeah.
So they supported me through that for a couple years, and then, yeah, in 2016, we started being able to pay a staff. So we did it for a long time without being paid.
That is a long time. Yeah. But that's the thing. I think a lot of people hear about or read about or otherwise become, you know, cross paths with some aspect of a sanctuary and have no idea what all goes on to making that sanctuary work and all the challenges that are faced and how for someone usually that's either the founder or someone who is running it, that's the life. I mean, there's not really typically at least days off to speak of. There's certainly usually not vacations. I mean, it's like grueling and around the clock, but most of the people who are in those positions love it so much and love the animals that square is okay with them.
Yeah, it is definitely, you know, you have to be okay with a certain level of sacrifice, but you also, and this is something I've had to work on, you also have to be the kind of person who can ensure that your own needs are getting met. And that's where the balance becomes crucial. So if we aren't able to take care of ourselves or the people around us, our volunteers, our supporters, people get burnt out.
Yeah.
And so there is a very, I don't get a lot of days off, but I make sure when I've reached that threshold, I'm like, hey, you guys, I need to, you know, spend the day kind of checked out and just having a bit of a different existence for like 8 hours.
Yeah.
And, you know, the type of person I think typically that's drawn to sanctuary work, and I'm one of them, there is some guilt when you need those times because you look at the list of things that need to be done at any given moment and you think, well, if I check out for a little bit, like,
this won't get done.
More things to add to the list.
But yeah.
It is important. I mean, we want to be healthy and capable of doing our best, and it is a manual labor job. So you do have to take that into account. But I would say, you know, it's a 24/7 job. There's never a moment that you're not, you know, thinking about it. We live on property, so you wake up in the middle of the night, you start thinking, well, I hope this is okay. I wonder about that. There's just things all the time.
Yeah.
That are constantly running.
Right. Well, that's what I said kind of at the opening of our conversation is really there's a certain kind of person and really a certain kind of personality that can do that kind of job and not let it get to them and keep going. And the key thing, like you said just a moment ago, is burnout is so prevalent in that kind of different aspects of animal welfare, but especially, you know, caring for animals in a sanctuary, for example, that it sounds like you guys are very mindful of staving that off and making sure no one sinks into that, starting with you guys, but also the other people that work there and volunteer there, just because pretty soon, if that really does creep in, you're in trouble.
Yeah. In sanctuary work, you know, you see really terrible stuff. We don't take in a lot of animals that are perfectly healthy or have had an amazing life. And, you know, we're the next step. Usually what you're seeing is animals who come from really, really bad situations. And sometimes we have to go to those really bad situations. So you're exposed to a lot of negativity. And
yeah.
So there is, you have to work at the other side to remember to stay positive and remember that there are still good people. They do exist, even sometimes, though it's hard for us to see that.
Yeah.
And, you know, you have to stay driven by the positive, and that is super hard.
Yeah. But it sounds like you've really reconciled a lot of things about how this works and how this can work for you and how this can work for you guys as a couple. I mean, there's a lot of things to kind of sort through if this is going to be as long-term as it already has been. But, I mean, it sounds like you see this being completely out in the future indefinitely.
Yeah, the sanctuary, the goal is to have the sanctuary exist past me, past the group of people currently involved. You
yeah.
know, we would like the kindred spirits to be around for a long time.
Right. So this is Talking Animals on WMNF. I'm Duncan Strauss. If you just joined us, my guest is Logan Vindette, the Executive Director of Kindred Spirit Sanctuary, a Citra, Florida facility that provides a safe refuge to disabled, abused, abandoned, and neglected farm animals. If you'd like to ask Logan a question or offer a comment, please call 813-239-9663, email dj@wmnf.org, or text 813-433-0885. Let's get a caller involved in the conversation. Hi, you're on Talking Animals with Logan Vindette. Go ahead, please.
Thanks for having Logan on, and you're always doing a great job, Duncan.
Thanks.
Logan, I like your marketing, friends, not food. And I'd like you to comment on the personhood of these animals. I mean, I think one thing that non-vegans and people who hunt, et cetera, they don't see animals as having personhood. They think, first of all, that a person can only be a human, that other than their pets, that animals don't have any real personality. They're just kind of like living machines. But think of the suffering, and how can you communicate it to people that there's apparently 57 billion animals, billion with a B, are killed each year in the United States just for the meat eaters and the animal eaters alone. But each one of those animals suffers fear, and they want to have a peaceful life, and they live in terror from start to finish. Maybe you can expand on that concept.
Yeah, sure. So that's a big part of what we do. We have visitors out to the sanctuary on scheduled days and give tours, and we talk about these animal stories. And I think storytelling is a very important part of it. I think for the average person, and sometimes even vegans, but typically for the average person, they don't really realize what farmed animals go through. That's not part of their daily life. They see an end product in a package, or they drive down the road and they kind of see animals, you know, off the interstate. And so telling their stories is important, but for us too, we also believe meeting animals and spending time with them and seeing how different they all are. So if you spend any time watching a group of chickens, you will learn every single one of them is different. And we always refer to them as people. Animals are the best people I know, typically. But yeah, it's something that, as a whole, people are kept away from. We're kept away from really understanding that the animals that most people see as are not any different than the animals that most people see as pets. They're equally capable of being kind and compassionate and loving. Some of them are brats. We talk about that a lot at Kindred. You know, not all cows are these beautiful, sweet people. We have a couple that are real sassy, and that is important. It's important to acknowledge the differences, because if we kind of put all animals in a blanket and say, you know, all chickens are X, they're all smart, they're all inquisitive. Some of them are a little bit smarter than others, and that's okay, because that's how people are. We are the same. They're just like us in that. Some of them are so friendly and so kind, and some of them will give you a sideways look if you try to talk to them. And that's okay. That's the point of a sanctuary, is that we love them all, regardless of their personality, and that we let people interact with those personalities.
And personally, I kind of like the idea of hanging with a sassy cow, so.
you know, I do too, to a certain extent. Some of them are a little bit too sassy, but honestly, one of our cows that everyone loves is named Shelby. She's very well known, and she is one of the sassiest people on the planet, I believe, but people are drawn to that because she has a huge personality, and
yeah.
You can see it when you meet her, you know? Like,
that's great. Let's take another caller. Hi, you're on Talking Animals with Logan Vindette.
Hello.
Hi.
I originally was calling to ask for information. You mentioned about a dog park.
Yes, we'll be talking with Todd about that later in the show, so please stay tuned. If you have a question for Logan, that'd be great. Otherwise, we're going to keep moving.
All right. And also, I did work at a chicken plant, and it's horrible, and I became a vegetarian.
Okay, great.
It was scary to see what they did to them damn chickens.
I'm sure. No, those sound like just horrific tales, especially from people who've been up close as you have. So, good for you.
Yeah, it was very disturbing, and yes, I am happily vegetarian and will stay that way for the rest of my life after that experience.
Okay, well, thank you. Thanks for calling in, and thank you for sharing that.
All right, Duncan.
Thanks, man. So, Logan, let's talk a little bit more about the sanctuary itself. And in fact, maybe you could give us something of a verbal guided tour of the place. They kind of take us around at least some of the key elements of the sanctuary as we kind of get to know it just over the radio.
Sure. So, Kindred Spirits, we just moved in 2018. So we moved to a property that's just under 75 acres located in Citra, Florida. And right now, we have 166 residents who live there, who range all over the farmed animal gamut. So we have chickens, turkeys, ducks, geese, cows, pigs, horses, donkeys, goats, sheep, turkeys. I think that's all of them.
Yeah.
And, you know, we offer the public a chance to come meet them, as I said, through guided tours. We are constantly working on ensuring that our animals are getting all of their needs met. And then just last year, we received an accreditation through the Global Federation of Animal Sanctuaries that checks your, you know, standards of care, your record keeping, all your business practices.
Yeah.
So it's all of those things. We give every animal who comes to us the chance to kind of figure out who they are in a freer sense than they've ever had. And, you know, the ongoing care of them, they obviously are routinely looked at by our staff veterinarian. And we just try to make sure that everything that they need and they want gets met.
Yeah.
And some of them, as I said, that's easier than others. We have a lot of really sweet, wonderful residents. So if you come, they are so happy to meet you. And then we have some that make our lives a little bit more difficult, but that is the fun of it. You know, you want a good mixture of personalities.
For sure. Well, that's the thing. If you have other kind of more routine, let's say, maybe that's not the best word, but, you know, dogs and cats or whatever at home, depending on how many you have, you can really see distinctive personalities amongst them. And why wouldn't that be the case with cows or chickens or pigs or whatever? So it makes perfect sense. But that's one of the great things about being able to visit is that you can really see that and think of it in a different set of terms. In fact, how are the animals housed? Like, are cows with cows and pigs with pigs, or are they all kind of more intermixed depending on personalities or other factors?
Yeah, that's a great question. So typically, we house animals with their own species, and there's a couple reasons for that. Number one, diets are very important. So each of these species of animals eats very specific things. And we hire a nutritionist in once a quarter who overlooks our diet, looks at our animals, make sure that they're getting all the proper nutrition. So being able to feed them exactly what they need is very important. And some of the foods that you feed, let's say the pig food, can actually be deadly to male goats. It gives them urinary stones. Mm. They can die from that. So we try to, at the best of times, keep them separate.
Yeah.
Now, our sheep flock has all sheep and one cow and one goat in it.
Oh, wow.
Sometimes it just depends. The cow who lives in there, her name's Fiona. She's about a year old, and she is completely blind. And for her safety, especially since she's so little, we did want to introduce her to our other cattle. It's a large, large pasture, and our cattle actually do a lot of rotating throughout the sanctuary to different pastures.
Okay.
And so for her, she kind of needed a home base.
Yeah.
And so when we were looking at what's best for her, we decided, well, she should probably hang out with the sheep. She's going to be bigger than them. The sheep are pretty docile for the most part. There's a couple rowdy ones in there.
Yeah.
But she gets along great there. And then the goat who lives in there, his name's Ramsey. He's another popular guy. He is hates other goats. Like, he's petrified of them. He just does not do well in a goat herd. And so he actually helped us raise one of our other blind cows named Owen, who recently passed away. And so when we rescued Fiona, we thought, well, this will give her a partner. And Ramsey is so chill. Like, he's easy to get along with. So those two moved in with the sheep, and they're doing really well in there.
I'm going to get to one of our emailer questions, but I have to now, since you mentioned a few things just almost in that last response, these names are fantastic. Who names the animals?
So when we get animals in, they always go into a 30-day quarantine minimum to ensure their health. Typically, during that period of time, as we're getting to know them, a name comes forward. We don't usually pick names before. We kind of let everyone feel them out, and then names come pretty organically.
I see. All right. Well, somebody's definitely got some imagination, because you don't find a goat every day named Ramsey, or a cow named Shelby, and so on. So, or Fiona as a cow. So, again, this is Talking Animals on WMNF. Speaking with Logan Vendette, the executive director of Kindred Spirit Sanctuary, which provides again safe refuge to disabled, abused, abandoned, and neglected farm animals. She's also going to be the speaker at Florida Voices for Animals Have a Heart Dinner in Tarpon Springs this Saturday, February 29th. We invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663, emailing dj at wmnf.org, or texting 813-433-0885. So as we're sort of talking about animals and how they're living, or occasionally, I guess, like with Fiona, mixed with some other animals, one of our emailers said, enjoying the show so much, great guests as the subject line. She says, quick question, do donkeys and horses generally get along?
Yes, in a general term, they do get along pretty well. They eat the same types of food. They need the same types of care. Our donkeys and horses have always gotten along pretty splendidly. When you first introduce them, like, we have a donkey named Chalky, and when he first got introduced to the group, he actually got along better with the horses than he did with the donkeys. So once again, they're all kind of individuals, but
yeah,
typically you keep those two together and they do really well.
Yeah. So one thing I wanted to ask, Logan, you kind of touched on it in answering our first caller a little bit, but a number of sanctuaries are philosophically opposed to allowing visitors, or maybe allow them on a special occasion a couple, three times a year. As you've sort of noted, Kindred Spirit seems to hold an entirely different view, encouraging visitors in various ways. So is that mostly about the storytelling and just introducing people that otherwise maybe wouldn't have a chance to get to know a cow, Sassy or otherwise, and just seeing what that might do to their kind of perspective overall?
Yeah, for sure. So with my own personal story, you know, not knowing farmed animals at all and getting to know them, and that kind of leading me into this compassionate vegan lifestyle, it's very important to me that we let people come meet animals. So there is some of that balance. You want the animals to have a lot of quiet time and downtime. And there are animals that people won't see because that's their choice. They don't want to interact with people. But I think for your average person, we really don't understand how these animals, number one, get to a plate for people who are still eating them. And number two, we don't understand that they are so unique and so individual. And so sanctuaries, I feel like, are one of the few places that people can experience that. And so one of our driving missions is education. We want people to come and meet a pig and hopefully have an impact on their life that ends up saving the billions of animals that are being killed each year.
Yeah, I really think that's great, because I think for a lot of people, for example, in terms of well-known pigs online like Esther, people form really kind of strong connections and want to see what she's up to and what her dads are up to and track her sort of day-to-day thing. But that's still, there's still a step removed from that if you're just looking on Facebook or whatever, her website or whatever. So the idea that you can go there to Kindred Spirits or places like that and actually hang out with and talk with, cuddle with, whatever, a pig or any number of other animals, I think just makes a huge difference and really sort of bridges any gulf, I think, that people might have about farm animals. Because otherwise, without having that opportunity, people just know at best what they see online and otherwise don't even think about the connection between what they might be having for dinner that night and how it got there and who got there.
Yeah, for sure. Getting a big, like, wet, slobbery, rough kiss from a cow across your face is life-changing. it is something that, like, it's one of my favorite things is to see people who come. We just had a guest this last weekend that's like, oh my gosh, I'm petting a cow.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, it's that eye-opening moment of like, hey, this cow literally came over to the fence for no reason other than they wanted to see me and who I am.
Yeah.
And now they're licking me. And that is a moment, I feel like, where we can start to affect change in people. And it's a very hard moment to replicate other ways. And there are organizations who are doing great work at that with video and Esther the Wonder Pigs and other, you know.
Yeah.
So many people love her.
Sure.
I don't have that skill. I have, you know, a skill that is, you know, the hard work side of animal care and being able to kind of share those animals with people. So I do feel very passionately about it.
And Logan, I'd be interested to know, since so much of the emphasis of these tours and visits is education, as you noted, when people have those kind of experiences where they're hanging with or getting licked by a cow or whoever it might be, do you have opportunities to follow up and see what they're thinking or what changes, if any, they might have made in their lives since the time they visit Kindred Spirits?
Yeah, so we get a lot of interaction to our social media with people who've come out. And I will say we get a lot of return visitors, which is really cool to kind of see people change over time.
Yeah.
Moving to our new community has been really interesting because Citra is a very rural farming type of community. And we get a lot of people who visit us from there. So that's been interesting. And I think, you know, we always look at it as, did we plant a seed today? Did we give someone the opportunity to, maybe they're not making a change right now, but the next time they sit down to a meal, they're going to think about that pig who they get belly rub.
Yeah.
And at major events, we also try to offer, you know, vegan options for people to try. So we do a lot of sampling of different vegan products. We promote at the end of our tours that people go to a local restaurant here in Ocala that offers vegan options. We have their menu up so we can be like, this is a great vegan option. You should go try it. And a lot of people do that.
Yeah. No, that's great. And then I guess part of the things that happen at the sanctuary itself are vegan potlucks.
Yeah, if I'm being completely honest, I am a vegan foodie. I love food.
Okay.
I think about eating a lot during the day. And so it is definitely something that we also love to share with other people. We have non-vegans who come to the vegan potluck, typically brought there by their vegan friends. So I think, you know, food is important in our culture. I think it's one of the things that scares people the most about going vegan is they feel like they'll be ostracized at family groups. How will they go out to eat? How do you live a life if you're not eating animals? And I think people think of it as something that's restrictive. And something that we want to show them is that it's not really restricted. There are vegan options that run the whole gamut. Like, you can eat super healthy or you can eat junk food.
And
whatever you're doing right now, we can find a vegan version of that. You know?
Yeah. No, it's widened out so much, especially just in the last few years where really, whatever that person has a hankering for, we've got your vegan alternative right here. So another thing that seems like it would be a cool opportunity to affect some change or at least have education in its most welcome form, perhaps, is the sanctuary sleepover. So how does that work? I mean, it's kind of self-evident, I guess, but...
Yeah, it's relatively new for us. So when we moved to this new property that we're on, 2018, we got a farm that happened to have a barn apartment in it. And so something that we've always wanted to do is give people the opportunity to kind of stay for a couple days, just get immersed in it, meet the animals, hang out with us. And so, yeah, we opened this barn apartment at the end of last year for people to sleep over, usually for the weekend. And they can book that through the veg visit site, which is kind of like Airbnb, but it's for vegan homes. Basically.
Mm-hmm.
So we chose that site because obviously it's important to us that everything be vegan. And, you know, we help people through that. Typically the people staying are already at least vegetarian, have some understanding, but we can email anyone who wants to visit a list. If you've got, you know, we have had a couple non-vegans who stayed who requested food lists and we're able to provide that for them. And there's something that, like, there's magical times on the planet, I feel like, and sunrise and sunset are two of those. And I think, too, sometimes just being in the peace around animals and having that experience also somewhat life-changing.
Yeah.
So.
Wow.
It's definitely, it's really cool.
And how much, maybe it depends on what the person wants to do or whatever, but how much do they get involved in chores or helping out around the sanctuary if they're staying a day or two?
So that is open to them. We offer volunteer sessions and private tours and chances to just hang out. They sign up for all that when they sign up, so we've got a good idea. But yeah, it depends. You know, definitely most people want at least the chance to take that private tour and kind of hang out.
Sure.
And, you know, get to really get some one-on-one time with the animals. And a lot of people volunteer too. You know, hanging out with animals is cool, but I will definitely plug doing the hard work.
Yeah.
It's a different experience than most people have. You know,
right.
Most of us do not grow up on a farm. Most people have not, you know, mucked out a stall. They haven't done some of that stuff. So it's a really neat opportunity to kind of learn what the work is that goes into having these types of animals in your life.
For sure. Well, we're in our last moment or two, but let's see if we can take one more call and another question or two on my own. Hi, you're on Talking Animals with Logan Vendette.
Hi there. I'm from Gulfport. I didn't hear the very beginning of the program, but I wonder what happens to the chickens' eggs? I mean, they continue to lay eggs, correct?
Yeah, that's a great question. We get that one a lot. So our chickens that are egg-laying chickens, we actually feed their eggs back to them. So a large portion of their nutrients are going into developing eggs. So we provide that back to them. It's something that a lot of sanctuaries do. Fortunately for us, a lot of our girls are older, so we don't have, they're not constantly putting out eggs. You know, most of the chickens that we get in sanctuaries are considered spent layers, so they're not laying as heavily a number as they would when they're younger.
Well, it sounds like a great place. Good for you.
Thank you so much for your call. So a couple of last questions, things for us to address here, Logan. So, one that came in as an email early in the show, so I'll ask that one now. Can you tell us a little about the Thanksgiving for the Turkeys program?
Yeah, so this year we're going to be having our Think of Turkey on Thanksgiving Day. We also hold a potluck that day, which usually has about 150 to 200 people at it. But our turkey celebration, we make a gourmet meal for the turkeys, and we kind of celebrate them that day. So instead of, you know, what most people think of as far as eating a turkey, we want to appreciate the lives of the turkeys that we have living. And so we make them a big spread, and you can come watch them eat it. It's really funny. Most of the birds that we have come out of industrial situations, so they have to be kept on very strict diet. So this is like their day a year. That's just fantastic.
Yeah.
They really enjoy it. It's a good time.
That's very cool. And last thing, one of the things I said at the beginning of the show, just as an overall context for people who run sanctuaries, and among their many challenges, animal sanctuaries, obviously, veterinary bills of sometimes astronomic proportions. Can you talk a little bit about the vet program that you guys have set up at Kindred Spirits?
Yeah. So we started in 2017 with this idea that we had, that we now call Kindred Cares Veterinary Services. But we realized that, you know, as a sanctuary ourselves, it can be crippling at times. If you get one emergency, the money you spend can be astronomical. And so we thought, you know, we would love to have a veterinarian on our staff, but as typical for, you know, what we do at Kindred, we also thought, how do we turn that into something better? You know, it's great for us to have good, but how do we help other people? So we started this program, we hired our staff veterinarian, and right now we have about 1,000 animals at other sanctuaries that our veterinarian oversees the care of. So we train caregivers there on how to provide the correct care. The veterinarian will come out and see those animals for them. And so it's an opportunity for us to help them. And we don't charge for the services, and they pay, you know, cost of the med right now. And we're hoping to expand in the future.
Wow, that sounds really cool and a great way to really help all kinds of animals, not just the Kindred Spirits, but elsewhere, get good treatment and not break the bank.
Yeah, you know, it's one of the hardest parts. Like, you can pretty much, you know what your feed costs are going to be, you know, all those things, but the animal veterinary side of it can be so, so drastic. You can walk into a veterinary hospital and think, okay, you know, they might be a little bit sick, and I've had this happen, and the bill is $7,000.
Yeah.
You know, so we want to help people, and providing really good care at the sanctuary, it can help you prevent emergencies, and we believe in that, so that's something that we want to help everyone be able to do.
That's great. Cool. Well, Logan, we're just about reaching the time. We've been speaking with Logan Vendette, the Executive Director of Kindred Spirits Sanctuary. And again, the website is kssfl.org for Kindred Spirits Sanctuary, Florida. And also, as I mentioned earlier a couple of times, I want to just mention one last time, she'll be the speaker at Florida Voices for Animals Have a Heart Dinner in Tarpon Springs this Saturday, February 29th. And FloridaVoicesForAnimals.org is where you could find out more about that if you're interested in hearing more from Logan or meeting her or having a nice meal and hearing her talk. So, Logan, thank you so much for joining us today on Talking Animals and all your great work on behalf of all of our animal friends.
Thank you for having me. It was a pleasure.
Great. Thank you.
Thanks.
In a moment, I'll speak with Todd Goldfarb about Hair of the Dog, his new dog park bar combo in Seminole Heights, with the grand opening set for this Saturday. It appears that your dog can play with other dogs while you bend your elbow, but we'll find out more about that in a moment. Right now, though, we're going to step into the comedy corner. It's always a treat to play something by Kevin Nealon. He's a delightful combination of sharp and whimsical, particularly when it comes to his animal material. This is a piece called Cows on the Roof by Kevin Nealon in today's comedy corner on Talking Animals on WMNF.
Most animals are smart, although, you know, I remember during the tsunami in Sri Lanka, I read about this. The animals, they have like a sixth sense. They knew it was coming, and they took off for the hills the day before it happened. They all survived. They didn't tell anybody else. They kept it a secret. They, come on, just us. Come on, keep it quiet. Move it along. Let's go. But I have a whole newfound respect for animals now. I give them a lot more credit. In fact, now when I see a dog chasing a car, I will chase that car too. Oh, yeah. Animals are something. I rescued a couple of cats not long ago. Hey, do your cats throw up all night long? Is that what they do? Is that the M.O.? I mean, all night long, all I heard was, whoa! And I wake up in the morning, and there is puke everywhere. It's like living in a fraternity house or something. You know, it's just crazy. And you know what? Not even puke. They're hairballs. And I know that because I sifted through it with a little stick. A couple of berries, but mostly hair. Mostly hair. Yeah. And you got to get it off the carpet quick, otherwise it stains. You've got to make a decision. Either get them off or let them accumulate and become like a sticky shag carpet after a while. Animals are smart. That's all I'm going to say. I watch the Weather Channel. They always show the floods in the Midwest, right? And they show the cow up on the roof, you know, surrounded by water. I don't know how she gets up there. I guess she comes up the stairs, I guess. Do they have stairs in a barn? I don't know. I don't know. Comes up the stairs, crawls out the window, grapples up to the roof, just waits it out. They should show that. They should show that. Maybe they should have the Cow Network. I'd watch the Cow Network. But even here in California, you know, the animals warn you before an earthquake. They'll start barking like crazy. The dogs, you know, the cats will hide under the cars. You just have to know the signals, what to look for. Okay, like if you live in the Midwest, right, and you're going down the stairs and there's a cow coming up the other way, you get the boots. You get the boots. It's common sense.
That was Kevin Nealon with a piece called Cows on the Roof, taken from his album, Now Hear Me Out. Now let's speak with Todd Goldfarb about his new Tampa Dog Park Bar Enterprise, Hair of the Dog. This is Todd Goldfarb on Talking Animals on WMNF. Good morning, Todd.
Good morning. Thanks so much for having me.
You bet. Thanks for joining us. So let's jump right in. How did the idea for Hair of the Dog come about?
My wife and I were at a bar, and we have a barker. And I was mortified. And she said, wouldn't it be nice if there were a place you could let the dog off leash and still have a beer? And that's how the idea was born.
Wow. So I imagine once that idea was born, actually trying to execute it involved a fair amount of red tape, zoning, licensing, et cetera. How many steps did you go through to get where we're just on the cusp of the grand opening on Saturday?
Oh, my God. This was an absolute nightmare. This was a disaster from day one. But this was a lot harder than it looked. But I guess the best thing you can say about it is we hung in there and we showed some grit and we made it. The door's opening, so that's the best thing you can say about it. It was, we didn't know what to expect, and it's a good thing we didn't.
Yeah, no, because obviously if you knew what you were up against, you probably wouldn't have kept going or you wouldn't even have started. So without getting into cost, which we can't really talk about on the air here, how does it work? So someone goes to the park, and do they pay something just to go to the park, or do they only pay something if they're getting a beer, or how does that work?
All right, so the park basically is 30,000 square feet of fenced-in off-leash dog park with a beer and wine concession stand. and it has little bathrooms in the back of it. So it's just, it's a big open space, so your dog can run around and you have a beer.
Yeah.
And if you don't have a dog, you can come in for free. And you can just enjoy it like a big beer garden. But you better love dogs because they're running around like crazy.
Yeah, that's if you're not a dog lover, it's an odd place to go hang out. Yeah, for sure.
There wouldn't be any reason to be there.
Yeah.
Or you can buy a day pass or a year pass. We always encourage people to just try it for a day and see if you like it.
Yeah.
So that's how we do it.
Cool. As far as the grand opening, which again is this Saturday, from when to when, what's the time of the whole shebang?
We've been having a soft opening for the last week or so, just kind of learn the ropes a little bit.
Sure.
But this Saturday, it'll be from noon to 10. But our hours are going to be from Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays, 3 to 9, Fridays, 3 to 10, Saturdays, noon to 10, and Sundays, noon to 7. The park itself, though, does have some rules, so I'd like to get those out because I don't want anybody to waste their time coming out there without knowing the rules, because there are some rules about the park.
Yeah, I figured they'd have to probably show a certain kind of paperwork or that certain kind of things have happened. So, sure, why don't you rattle those off, Todd? Go ahead.
Let me rattle those off real quick. It's 21 and up, just so everybody knows. It's no kids, 21 up for the safety of kids. You know, you can't do it that way.
Yeah.
The dog has to be 6 months old and spayed or neutered, no exceptions. You have to bring a paper copy of up-to-date vaccination forms for rabies, DHLPP, and Bordetella. We need to know that your dog is up to date on shots. I know it's a burden, but in order to ensure safety of the dogs, you have to do it that way. There's just no two ways about it. And again, you have to become a member, and it's either a day pass or a year pass. But we always encourage people just to try it for the day and give it a shot and see if you like it.
And in terms of showing that paperwork, are you required to bring that each time, or once you bring that, does that go on file, kind of, where you don't have to whip it out each time you visit the park?
No, you just come in the first time, you enter into the system, and then you're in the system forever.
Okay.
You're in, and so the first time it's going to take a couple of minutes to get in.
Sure.
The second time you come in, it's 1 minute. You're in the system, and you're in the system forever.
That's great. And this sounds, pretty much... Like, the basic rules, I think, are required, A, if you're serving any kind of alcohol, and B, for the safety of everybody, you want to make sure that there's those kinds of vaccines and other things documented for everybody.
Safety is really number one for us on that. So, like, there is a separate side for small dogs and small dogs and big dogs, so that small dogs are safe, but it's a pretty decent-sized dog park, so there's plenty of room for everybody, but the little dogs do have their own separate area, so they're always safe.
That's
and
great.
And we have people on the inside who are, we call them park rangers, that are helping out, helping out with the dogs and stuff.
Okay.
You know, so that there's people there to help. So, and so you can enjoy your beer and enjoy the day.
That's
it's
great.
A pretty spot. Yeah.
Yeah. So let's hit a couple more quick things. We're almost at the end of our time here, Todd. But the address of Hair of the Dog is what?
It's 4211 North Nebraska Avenue,
mm-hmm.
and it's at the corner of Nebraska and Genesee, just right above MLK, down the street from Ella's and Nebraska Mini Mart and Southern Brewing.
Yeah.
And, it's right by your station.
That's right, just around the corner. And is it officially, because I know there was some confusion about this, but is it officially now indeed called Hair of the Dog?
I'm sorry. There was a lot of confusion out there. I was not the most tech savvy person in the world. It's officially called Hair of the Dog, and now all the names of all the things are changed. If you go to Facebook, it's called Hair of the Dog Park, and if you go to our website, it's called Hair of the Dog Park and Bar.com, and the name of the place is Hair of the Dog.
So. Okay. Cool. And speaking of that, is there either a website and or social media sites that...
If you go to Facebook, just go Hair of the Dog Park.
Okay.
Facebook, and you'll find us. And our website is hairofthedogparkandbar.com. You'll find us. And the Instagram, somebody's working on the Instagram right now. We're still fine-tuning.
Sure.
We're getting around to everything.
That's great.
And, we're getting there.
Sounds cool. Well, I wish you well, and it sounds like it's a cool place to hang out, whether you're of the canine or human persuasion or both. So that sounds really cool. And somebody sent me a note that I was going to try to follow up, but we're out of time. And one of the things they said is, sadly, the paper copy and kennel cough requirements will keep me and many others I know from going to that park.
I know. It is unfortunate about the Bordetella. If you go to a doggy daycare or you get your dog professionally groomed, you'll get Bordetella. But if you don't, then you probably don't have Bordetella, and you'll have to ask your vet the next time. It's a cheap shot, but because we have so much social interaction between the dogs, in order to ensure the safety of the dogs, we have to have it. It's an unfortunate thing, but there's so much interaction between the dogs. They're chasing and playing and having a good time.
Sure.
And again, safety is number one.
I got you. Got to keep everybody safe no matter what, even if, unfortunately, that rules out a few folks from joining the fun. So we'll just kind of keep an eye on things. Well, maybe we'll get an update from you a little. Yeah, so they're saying, yeah, because I don't have copies of some of that stuff. So
yeah, I didn't want people to come all the way and not know that.
Right. No, I think that's super important. So
yeah.
People can try to prepare for that best they can, but at least they won't be surprised or disappointed at the door. So, Todd, thank you so much for joining us today on Talking Animals, and good luck this Saturday and beyond with Hair of the Dog.
Thank you so much for having me. Thank
you. Bet. All right, take care. Coming up at 11 on WMNF, it's Rob Lori with Radioactivity, extending the three-hour block of interviews, phone calls, news, and more, including the noon hour midpoint with Nola Lele. Then at 1 p.m., the music kicks back in with Euro Radio, hosted by Paco Morales, flowing into DJ Senflow, who's in for Scott Elliott today, doing the All Souls edition of It's the Music at 2 p.m., and the music continues into the afternoon, the evening, and beyond here on WMNF. So I invite you to join me next week for another edition of Talking Animals on WMNF, Tampa, Brandon, Clearwater, Largo, Weekiwachee, and beyond. NPR News headlines coming up momentarily, and then Rob Lori with Radioactivity. See you next Wednesday. Thanks again.